Blog Talk Radio.
We are the UR Tennis Network. Our mission is to be the voice of tennis. We enlist a team of passionate enthusiasts to promote our sport. We strive to bring interesting perspectives on the many spins of tennis. Our goal is to provide the learners of our sport with current news and information from many angles. We seek active participation from communities interested in tennis, but tennis is not interested in them. We are expanding our outreach. Tennis is a true lifetime sport that needs to be talked about, and the UR Tennis Network pledges to pursue this idea relentlessly.
Good afternoon. We want to welcome you to today's show of the American College Experience. My name is Jason Haynes. I am the host of today's show and also the Chief Executive Officer of the network. I want to welcome you to today's live broadcast. If you're listening live, I want to also welcome you to the podcast, which many of you catch through the course of the week, as well as the other podcasts that are on our network. Many of you have caught them through the years. This is our third year on air, and we are approaching that glorious 1,000th hour of broadcasting, and we're so excited about this. We were able to kind of pioneer this idea of tennis podcasting. It had not been done before. It was just, we were just told it couldn't be done. How in the world could you talk an hour about tennis and keep interest in it? And it has spawned many other people to talk about tennis online, and many of my colleagues out there have started to do this, and we're very excited for them and for others that are out there. So thank you for listening to us and for listening to the other podcasts as well. And as a part of the UR Tennis Network, one time we've had as many as 6 shows on the air, and now we have 3, and we're continuing to look for other people that love to talk about tennis, and it takes about an hour a week, and we're all volunteers here, very passionate about the sport of tennis. And so if you're interested, you can always contact me at Jay Haynes, that's H-A-Y-N-E-S, the number 10, the letter S, at gmail.com, and that will get you in touch with me, and I'd love to visit with you about what's going on here. So we are totally amateurs. We don't claim to be professionals of anything, and would prefer that we keep it that way. We're just interested in talking tennis. So on today's program, we're going to have kind of an intermix of programs. One of the shows that we do host on air, and it comes on Monday morning, is Lisa Stone's show, Parenting Aces, and Lisa runs her own blog site out there, which is Parenting Aces, and she talks about all things good with junior tennis, American tennis, and it came across my idea the other day, a couple of weeks ago, was I've never had Lisa come on and talk to me about what she's discovering in the junior tennis world, and it's a perfect crossover for what we do here on the American College Experience. And so we're going to talk about what she's learning on the junior side of American tennis, and we're going to discover what's happening on the college side here and just kind of take you through an hour's worth of discussion. We've got some just absolutely huge things that are happening in the college athletic world out there, and I have been scampering around trying to figure some things out, and it is mind-boggling the pace that college athletics is moving. And as many of you know, in the last week to 10 days, Northwestern has, the football team has voted to, or there is a move to unionize the football team up there, and then over the weekend we had the University of Connecticut basketball player claim that he couldn't eat food because they were selling athletic jerseys and he wasn't getting any of the money, and so there is something going on. I'm going to talk a little bit more about that in just a second, but you know, right quick, I wanted to let everybody know, you know, John Isner has moved up to number 9 in the world, which is very exciting for us, and I have put out my feelers. And just so you know, if you listened last week, many of you know I was chasing after John Roddick, the University of Oklahoma coach, chased after that guy for a couple of weeks. He had led his team to the number one team in the NCAA and disappeared. Not quite sure. We had email conversations. I tried to call his office and never got a response back from him. I'm not quite sure. So if you know Mr. John Roddick, and I've been a fan of the Roddicks, the whole family, for a long time. I'm actually from Vernon, Texas. I know Andy lives down in the Austin area. But if you know those Roddicks, I would appreciate any help you can put out there to say, hey, would you make that up and get on the American College Experience and tell people about the University of Oklahoma and what you're doing there? Because I think it's important that people understand that this is one of the great American success stories in American college tennis, and what he's doing there is bringing such great attention to a conference that was just unheard of years ago on the college scene. It used to be the Pac-12 and the SEC, and now the Big 12 right in the middle with Texas, Oklahoma, and Baylor. And I talked to Coach Michael Center, who's going to be on my show next week. I'm so excited about this because right in the middle of America sits the Big 12, and it's not as if they have 12 schools playing in the Big 12, but these guys have managed to put together three squads that are just tearing up some college tennis. So congratulations to them. Let's try to get John Roddick to come on the show. If you've got some connections, try to make that happen. But anyway, back to Isner. You know, Isner played at Georgia. He is currently ranked number 9 in the world, and I hope he can maintain that. We enter the toughest part of the year for this young man, entering the clay court season, and this is the toughest part of the year for any American player, period. As many of you know, the dirt is not real nice to us, and the internationals are really going to shine here. Followed by John Isner, another college player, American, right at number 65, Bradley Klon, Stanford University. And so excited that the Cardinal is out there battling hard. The young man has done a wonderful job since college and keeps climbing the ladder, so to speak. And then right behind him, not to be outdone by much, at number 69, Steve Johnson, by far and away, as many of you know, statistically, the most successful college tennis player ever to play the game. You know, I just hope he hangs in there. I mean, this is a tough game. You got to plan on losing every week, and it's not like college where you get to build a 77-0 type record here. But keep hanging in there, Mr. Johnson, and you know, got to remember it's a marathon and not a sprint, and just keep building. So, anyway, now back to this Northwestern UConn thing, and I just want to. I'm going to get on my soapbox here a little bit, and I've been talking to some pretty high-up coaches in a lot of different divisions, some athletic directors and things, and I think that along with the scoring system changes, I think that, and we're going to get to that with Lisa. She had the ITA executive director, David Benjamin, on her program last week, and they were bombarded with questions about some of that, and she had a great visit. And we're going to discuss that here in a little bit. But I just want to say that I think we're entering some troubling times with what's happening, and I don't know if it'll be immediate or maybe 2, 3, 4 years down the road, but college tennis has a big warning sign going over it as far as longevity goes, because when the Northwestern athletic program decided to allow or had this unionization idea come across its doorstep, and then as they proceeded through this, non-revenue generating sports came under fire. And so did Title IX as we know it. And in my visiting with some pretty high up super conference coaches, my understanding is that the NCAA may create a new division, a Division IV. And what this would do is essentially create four super conferences. four super conferences of 16 teams, and let's just think about this a little bit. Well, we know that the Pac-12 is making a move to go to the Pac-16. You would have the Big 16 somewhere in the middle of the U.S., whether it is currently the Big 10 or the Big 12, the way it's associated now. One of those two big boys is going to have to give up the big something. And then the SEC. Now, if you think about the way the college football playoff system is set up currently, 64 teams makes a pretty good college football playoff system, and my gosh, there's no telling how much money you could make out of that system. 64 teams is the current NCAA basketball system. And imagine that each of those super conference 64 teams would like a piece of that pie, and no telling how much advertising money you could get out of that. So if you sit outside those four super conferences, what are your chances to get into any of that money? I'm going to say very little. So you really have no chance of breaking in ever. And I'm going to bet that football and basketball really have no concern with giving away any of that money to any of the other sports. You're going to get a little greedy with that money, if you know what I mean. So they may try to figure out a way how to circumvent having to be equal, as they've had to be with the court systems and Title IX through all this. And so my concern is that, why do we need to have men's and women's tennis? Why do we need to have men's and women's swimming? Why do we need to have men's and women's golf? I mean, we really don't have the schools out there, other schools out there participating in it. They've dropped programs. They're not really playing a true format. We're not generating any revenue at it. There aren't any fans in the stands watching these events. So what's the point in playing these contests? And we all know that the athletic director is situated around the United States of America because of the Sears Cup and what's happening. Their idea of college athletics is get fans in the stands and generate money. It's not about teaching lessons anymore. And so we're losing the players' experience, and we're moving more towards the fans' experience. And this is where we're going to end up losing what college athletics is about. And that's what's scary here. And I don't know if the women get that either, and I don't know if the courts can help the women in this environment, because, you know, the men have been very bitter ever since Title IX entered their world years ago, when they had to give up their portion of the money to kind of even things out. And slowly but steadily, they've been figuring out ways on how to distance themselves in this. And TV has allowed that to happen. So Northwestern is going to unionize their athletic department, and my understanding is that, you know, to counteract this, the NCAA is going to offer an olive branch here. We're going to pay you $2,000, you athletes, to kind of pay for play. And then the argument comes up, so how are these athletic departments really nonprofit organizations if they're going to admit that they need to pay their athletes to play? So now the government's going to get involved in all this and really research how can you afford to pay your athletes. And then other students are going to ask, well, why are you paying your athletes extra money and not paying your academics other money? You see how this is all going to lead to so many other questions. And I don't know where it ends. And you can see how the ITA in this is sitting there worried about scoring format so that we can get college tennis on TV, while they need to be worried about surviving. Because we're under attack here as far as a college sport goes. And there are people out there in charge that don't have the foresight to see that big-time college athletics doesn't really care about us as a sport. And as the guest of today's show put it so eloquently a couple of weeks ago when I listened in on her show, when we lose the ability to scholarship athletes in tennis, we're going to lose a large group of people that play tennis. And I don't think people understand that. And as another one of our hosts on our show puts it so well, and he's a statistic-minded person, You know, currently the USTA only has 24,000 people playing in their junior programs, and the American high school system has 300,000 people playing. So if we lose college tennis, I'm curious, and maybe she can tell me when I bring her on here in just a little bit, how many people are we going to lose out of those 24,000? So I'm going to bring her in. I know she's been waiting. She's been listening for a long time. So let me see if she's there. Ms. Stone, are you there?
I am here, Jason. How are you?
I'm good, and I appreciate your patience today. But there's a lot going on in college athletics. And, you know, you and I cross over each week in regards to some of these issues, and others we have no idea what's going on with each other. And this is just one of those ideas where I thought it would be beneficial, after you interviewed ITA Executive Director David Benjamin, to have you on and see what you found out. So before we get into that, do you have some ideas or some comments on what I said there? I mean, how many people do you think if would we lose if this happens with the unionization here? I mean, just any idea here?
Well, here's my thought. USTA has been talking an awful lot about the challenge of having kids choose tennis over other sports, and going after athletes rather than going after tennis players, and making tennis attractive to the average child and the average child's family as a sport to focus on throughout their junior development years, right? I mean, this has been a big push. We have read and seen, you know, programs come out of USTA that target inner-city children, that target the Hispanic community, you know, that are going after the school populations. And I think all of these are great programs. But here's the thing. Most children, I think, when they enter sports, enter with the idea of becoming a professional athlete and being a star at their sport. The parents, on the other hand, after they realize how expensive it is to take that little Johnny or little Julie through junior sports, whatever the sport is, are oftentimes looking at that sport as a way to then pay for college, or at the very least, open the door to a college education for their child. Mm-hmm. So if tennis ceases to be a collegiate sport, a scholarship sport, what are the chances of attracting new people to our sport and having them choose tennis for their kids? I just, to me, it's kind of a no-brainer that we have to preserve the college tennis experience and the opportunity for players to earn scholarships to play tennis in college in order to continue to attract young kids and families to the sport.
Well, Lisa, and you addressed this last week. I mean, and I am scared to death of the USTA's idea of the college on-campus program here. And what scares me about this is that the athletic directors see this as a free play experience. In other words, that we do not have the scholarship athletes yet. We give the tennis on-campus experience. And the USTA sees this as, wow, we've got a lot of people playing college tennis on campus.
And paying USTA to do it. And paying USTA to do it. And as I pointed out in my conversation with David Benjamin, because he did talk about tennis on campus as an alternative at these schools that are dropping their varsity programs, the difference is there are no scholarships available if you want to go and play tennis on campus. It is a club sport. And that's a key difference between varsity tennis and tennis on campus. And nobody seems to talk about that difference because it's in USTA's interest to build those tennis on campus programs. They're making money from that.
It sure is, and what's happening here is the school's not having to spend any money.
Correct.
You know, and this is a situation where you take a smaller Division II, a Division III, a JUCO program, and you put this tennis on-campus program out there, and this is like, wow, why haven't we thought of this before? I mean, we don't have to spend any of our budget money on any sort of, you know, we're having to give our kids the T-shirts and that say the school's name on them, and the kids are given, they're bringing their own rackets. They provide the balls. We practice 2 days a week, and the coach, we don't have to pay him anything except an hourly wage to be the student activities coordinator, you know, which we do anyway.
Not only that, the kids are paying their own way to travel to the events, you know, or hosting their own fundraisers to raise the money. So, I mean, it's not the same experience as varsity tennis. It's very, very different. And people need to understand that you can't substitute one for the other.
Yeah, and so as a college coach, a former college coach, one of my big pitches, and I was a women's coach, was, and I ran into this a lot at junior events, I would always encourage female parents, I would say, you have got to push your daughter to play college tennis, because we know from a statistical standpoint that $20 to $25 million a year would go unused in women's scholarships for tennis. Now, and this was put out there statistically when I first got into college tennis. Now, the numbers may be askew at this point, but I would try to put that number out there to encourage parents to realize and say, my gosh, I need to put my daughter in college, you know, to pursue the college tennis idea here. Now, Title IX has always been a friend to that and to the women. And on the men's side, we know that there isn't any money that's unused. And,
right.
And as, you know, as you went through it with David Benjamin last week, I was curious, did you get the impression that we're expanding college tennis, or is it shrinking?
Well, it gets spun by USTA, by ITA, to make it seem like we're all good. But the reality is that letters are going out pretty much on a regular basis, and I would say at least once a month, if not more often, to coaches around the country, asking coaches to write in support of these various college programs that are on the chopping block. So, to me, and I don't have the statistics, I mean, that's not my area of expertise at all, but as an outsider looking at this, it seems to me that these programs are in jeopardy. And what's happening as a result, and this is a good thing, is that it's forcing the college coaches and their staff to get really creative in terms of building support for their program, building their fan base, getting people to come to the matches and support the teams, because, you know, as we understand it, if the athletic director of the university or the president of the university happens to be driving by the tennis courts on a home match day and sees the stands full of cheering fans, it's going to be much harder for them to cut that program. So it's in the coaches' interest to really do their part to fill those stands and generate support, both on the campus and within the community.
You know, which brings up a great point. I mean, and you think about this. Who is the better promoter on a college campus? The football coach that gets the ESPN commercial airtime with the college game day, which sits there an hour of college football action being broadcasted through the course of a week, come out and watch the UT Longhorns or the Texas, and I'm biased, I'm Texas, I know you're in Georgia, so it would be the Bulldogs, but you know what I'm saying here, and we're broadcasting it on the radio, and it's the TV, and we got satellite TV, and all week long, or is it the tennis guy that gets no help, that muscles up free food for an event that gets 1,000 people in the stands and musters a home field advantage because of that. You know what I'm saying? I mean, this guy is a brilliant marketer.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Not the guy that's got the $1 million budget.
Right. Right. It's easy to get, you know, pardon me, but butts in seats when you've got $1 million to put out there. It's much more challenging when your budget is a shoestring and you really have to get creative. And one of the things I've seen this school year, in 2013-2014, is the coaches really going above and beyond to share information with each other and help each other get creative to fill the stands at their own matches. And to me, I mean, you wouldn't see that in football. You wouldn't see that in basketball, you know, where the coaches are collaborating across conferences, within their own conferences with their competitors. But, I mean, that's what we're seeing in tennis. These coaches are, you know, they're on conference calls helping each other figure out how do we fill our stands and make our programs relevant.
Now, Lisa, let me ask you, as you've seen this and been interactive with these coaches, I mean, is there a drive to get the junior population in the stands?
Of course, but it's difficult, you know. It's the juniors have their own training schedules, their own tournament schedules, and, you know, if a college match starts at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, the average junior's still at school. You know, and so unless they're in the same town and, you know, less than an hour's drive away, it's really challenging. So I would like to see more of the junior coaches really take an active role in getting their players to these matches. J.P. Weber is one of the ones here in Atlanta who does a phenomenal job. He'll, you know, load up a bunch of kids in a minivan and drive them out to Athens for the day. But you can only do that on the weekend, you know. You and during the winter, if the weather's bad and the match might get delayed because of rain or whatever, I mean, it's challenging. So, I you know, I think it's a great idea, and I hope that more junior coaches get more creative with that and get their players to the matches because, as Wayne Bryan says, you know, you get those kids there. And especially the younger juniors, you get them to a college match and watching these big boys and big girls out there competing, I mean, they might as well be watching Serena Williams or Rafa Nadal. I mean, a college player to them is every bit as massive in terms of influence as a professional. These, you know, the little ones don't know any different. And I can tell you, you know, with my own son going to the Georgia matches and having an opportunity to interact with those players starting at age 9 had a huge impact on him.
It is the proverbial, you know, carrot in front of the horse. I mean, if you take a child to only watch junior tennis matches, then that's all they know. But if you take them to a college tennis match, then, oh, my gosh, you mean there's more? And then if you take them to a pro tennis match, then there's more.
A lot of times, even going to, like, the lower-level pro events, the satellite tournaments of futures, the excitement in the stands doesn't even come close to rivaling a college home match. You know, so it's almost more influential to have the kids at the college matches, even high school tennis matches for a young junior. I mean, that's awesome. You know, you take them to your neighborhood high school match and, you know, they can connect with these kids and they know one day they're going to be going to that school and hopefully playing on that team. I mean, that's hugely influential.
So in your experience here with the American college system there at Georgia, is Georgia putting out a good experience for the junior on a day-in and day-out basis, or is it a, you know, do they have their special days? You know what I'm saying? I mean, so I guess what I'm
really
trying to say
is to that. I can't really speak to that, Jason, just because I live an hour and a half away, so for us, we would never be able to take advantage of, you know, a day-to-day experience. It's a special treat for us to drive over to Athens for a match. I do know that, you know, they're constantly doing things in their local Athens community. They're doing tournaments and workshops and kids on campus kind of days and all kinds of stuff, getting out to the local clubs and local parks and working with the kids there. I mean, Coach Manny Diaz is one of the great guys out there coaching college tennis, and because he's raised his own family in Athens, he understands the impact that it has for these young kids to have exposure to these college players. And, I mean, you mentioned John Roddick at the beginning of the show and that you were trying to get him on. I mean, John's a product of Manny Diaz and University of Georgia, you know.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So what a phenomenal reflection on Coach Diaz that one of his former players has led a team to be number one in the country. You know,
yeah.
I mean, this is what college tennis to me is all about. And you ask Coach Diaz how excited he is about seeing John Roddick have the number one team in the country. I mean, there is not one iota of, I wish it were us instead, or, you know, we're going to get them. There's none of that. It's only pride and support and, you know, thrill at the fact that his former player is being honored in this way and has had such success with his own team. I mean, and that's the kind of person I would hope most parents want their kid to be under the influence of for 4 years in college. You want these college coaches who take such pride in what they do and such pride in their players and develop these long-standing relationships with their players that go way beyond the 4 years of college. I mean, that's what I want for my kid. I want him to have exposure to that type of coach in college. And when we start looking at the numbers and when I read those emails of yet another program in danger of being cut, I mean, it just puts a pit in my stomach. And it's just,
yeah.
It's really sad.
I mean, so when you interviewed David Benjamin, and let's just talk a little bit more about that, and then we'll move on. But, I mean, were there some frustrating things in that interview that you just went, oh, you know, we need more time to go into this, or some things that disappointed you?
Well, I mean, I understand that he's in a precarious position. I mean, there's a lot of politics that goes into all of this, and I respect that. I did confirm with him after the show. I confirmed with him on the air, but I confirmed with him afterwards as well that he's going to come back on after the NCAAs, and we're going to do kind of a year in review and talk about all the stuff that happened, the experiments, what ITA's learned, what NCAA has learned, what USTA has learned,
yeah.
And really kind of rehash all of that. You know, it's hard because he's got so much history with the game. He's been involved for so many years, and he loves to tell stories, and he loves to talk about the history. He likes to educate people. And so, you know, as an interviewer, it's difficult because you don't want to cut him off because what he's saying is really interesting, but he tends to go off topic a little bit every now and then.
Yeah.
And, you know, I didn't want to interrupt him. I wanted to give him the opportunity to share, but at the same time, I wanted answers. And so I feel like, you know, maybe a half hour into the show started to cut him off a little bit and try to bring him back on topic. But, I mean, I do think he is a good guy. His heart's in the right place. He loves college tennis. And he's, like a lot of us, are just trying to figure out how we can continue to keep college tennis relevant. And he's, you know, he's at the mercy of the NCAA a little bit. Now USTA, even though for years USTA said we have nothing to do with college tennis, we have no influence over the NCAA, we can't get involved, all of a sudden they're involved. And I still am not really clear on how that happened, but I tend to believe that, you know, they saw an opening with this tennis on campus thing. So I don't know.
Well, it's an interesting, you know, when I listened to your show, I actually, I went and looked at the ITA and looked at their kind of their mission statement. And what caught me on it was the ITA claims to be the governing body of tennis. and of college
tennis.
And,
right.
Yeah, and it says that they're overseeing men's and women's varsity tennis at all levels. And what we discovered this year in particular was is that that's not the case. Because we discovered that the NCAA and now the USTA all have their hands in the in the proverbial pot here. And each one of them have discovered that we can influence the format in certain ways. And what I'm curious about, and maybe you'll get a chance when you review this, is statistically which one offered the best for the fan, which one offered the best for the player. Because as I said earlier on, it seems like we're drifting more towards the fan. And as far as I know, when we do that, when we start to become concerned with the person that is the fan, we're in trouble.
Especially at the college level, because this is supposed to be about the student athlete first and foremost. And, that's why to me this whole notion of getting these matches on TV and generating advertising income and all of that, who does that benefit? That doesn't benefit the student athlete. I mean, the student athlete wants to play a pure game of tennis. That's why they're there. They're there to compete, to train, to get better, all at the same time that they're earning a college degree, going to classes, and learning about how to manage their time in a totally different way than they've ever had to before, living on their own, you know? So I don't know. The whole thing frustrates me, and I worry. I mean, I'm on the one hand, I'm grateful that my kid is just finishing his junior year of high school, and so in a year and a half from now, hopefully he will be firmly entrenched in the college and in their tennis program somewhere, and hopefully in that year and a half span, not too much bad stuff can happen to college tennis. And I think that the bigger programs are going to be fine. It's like when all the changes were coming about in junior tennis last year, these 2014 changes that happened. You know, we knew that the top echelon of juniors were going to be fine. Nothing was going to change for them. It's the tier below that where you have concern, and it's the same thing in college. The big programs are safe. It's the ones below them that are in danger of losing their programs or having things warped to such a degree that they're unrecognizable.
I think I know that you're right about that, and I just hate to see. I'm a small college guy, and I hate to see that. And I always felt this way, that the big people get catered to a lot, and we've got to preserve the small town, the small community college setting here, because we are the people that actually preserve tennis. And I get that we need to, don't get me wrong, because as you say, I work for Dick at Stanford. I work for those guys. I understand it. They're going to get theirs, and they don't have to, they do work hard. But I've been on this other side of it too, and what is happening here is that people are forgetting that the core of America, the values of America, are down here. And each time that you forget about this program here, you're losing another value. And you're it's like you're kicking the feet out of a stool, and you keep kicking those feet out, and man, you're going to wonder what happened to the values. Well, we're down here crying, hey, we need some help, and nobody's hearing us. Because I mean, I want to get out of this college thing. We spent a good amount on it, but I want to find out what's going on in the junior world. But my viewpoint on it has always been, instead of catering to the Division I world, because they're going to do well, you rebuild the community college system so that there are more American players that can feed into the Division I system. It just makes a little more sense. And the families get to have their kids stay closer to home. And I can't understand why that's such a problem for everybody to understand.
Well, I'll tell you, as the mom of one kid who went clear across the country to college, there's value in having them leave the nest too. So, yes, I think the options should be available for sure. Different kids have different needs, and one of the beauties of our college system, period, not athletics, but just in general, is that there's something for everybody in this country. There is a school for every kid who wants one. I think that's important, and it doesn't make one type of school any more important than another or any more crucial than another. I think they're all equally important, and I think the options, keeping those options available, is really at the core of it, and it's the same thing with college athletics. The options need to be there. And, we need to preserve that.
That's very well put. Now, let's see here. And you bring up a good point, and I've said this before, and we've got 300,000 high school players out there playing in the system. It seems to me like these college coaches, maybe we need to shift their focus here, not as many USTA players. We don't need to recruit there. Maybe we need to go with the high school program. And your research here, and you're on the junior scene way more than I am, is that what's happening or what's going on down there with all these numbers?
Well, my experience, and I can only speak, to what's happening in my family, in my town, but where I am, high school tennis is not valued. I'm in Georgia. High school football is the end-all, be-all. Especially on the boys' side, tennis is very undervalued. And, for example, my son goes to public high school, and the tennis coach at our high school is the football conditioning coach, who, by his very own admission, doesn't play tennis, doesn't really know that much about tennis, but he's been coaching the boys' team for several years. Like I said, my son's a high school junior. This guy's been there since well before my son started. He makes the daily practices mandatory, even for the kids who work with private coaches. They must come to his practices. However, the practices are completely unstructured and basically, are hit and giggle for 90 minutes. He doesn't announce the lineup on match day until after the entire team has shown up for the match and has warmed up together as a team. Only at that point will he announce the lineup for that day's match. So while I agree with him that every player should be present at every match, even if they're not playing, they should be there to support their teammates. That's what it means to be part of a team. I do think it makes it very difficult for a kid who is used to playing competitive tennis to not know until right before he walks on the court whether or not he's going to be competing that day. It gives them very little time to mentally prepare for the match. And so my son has opted out of high school tennis the last 2 years. He played his freshman year and opted out sophomore and junior year. It's now coming back to bite us a little bit because I don't know if you've heard, but New Balance in conjunction with USTA is on a new event in July for high school tennis players. And it's going to be held on the Harvard University campus. It's going to be a phenomenal event. And the gentleman at New Balance who came up with the idea is actually going to be on the Parenting Aces show in a couple weeks. So we're going to really dig into the hows and whys and wheres and all that of the event. But sadly, my kid's not going to be able to play because he didn't play high school tennis this year. So it's a big bummer for me. But I'm still very supportive of the event, and I think it's awesome. There are parts of the country where high school tennis is thriving and where they are getting the top-level tournament kids, USTA kids, playing for their schools. But another side of that is so many top-level USTA tournament players are now being homeschooled that they don't belong to a high school to play for. So there are just so many factors that come into play with all this. It's, you know, it's really difficult. I would love to see high school tennis valued more highly. I think there has been a push in the past to get the college coaches to pay more attention. I actually have a very good friend whose son plays for his high school here in the Atlanta area. Their team has won the state championship 2 out of his 3 years, and they may win it again this year. And so they're a highly competitive team. But her frustration has been now that her son's graduating this year, the college coaches really don't care that he's had such success on his high school team. They're not looking at that. You know, all they care about is his USTA success. So there was a push earlier this year, actually, in, I believe, the Eastern section. I may be wrong. But there was a push in one of the sections to have ranking points available school tennis matches, to, you know, to have the high school tennis matches count toward USTA rankings. And that got pushed down, but now with this New Balance event and USTA partnering with New Balance on this, maybe that's going to get revisited. You know, it would be interesting.
Yeah, it is interesting, and I think it goes back to those 300,000 high school players, you know, and the USTA sees that and says, well, you know, if we can get $10 for every 300,000, you know what I'm saying? You know?
Yep.
We get 20.
Money, if we get $20,
exactly. I mean, we were making $300 million at the U.S. Open, but we can get 300,000, you know. But I am in complete support of this. I saw Mr. Steve Bellamy put a thing on Facebook, and I thought, this is a great idea. There needs to be a high school tennis champion. I'm in complete agreement with this. And there needs to be a kid in the United States of America that says I'm number one.
Right.
You know what I mean? And
I'm not sure this year's event is going to accomplish that, but it's certainly a step in the right direction.
Yes, ma'am. Now, let me ask you this. As far as another question I have for you is, and this is in Texas, we do a ranking thing here called a champ, super champ, and Zats. Now, have you, and I heard a couple of years ago that this was going to be streamlined into other sections. And in Texas, what it means is that, you know, if you're a super champ player, you're more likely to get a college scholarship. And the reason being that I'm asking this is because I was wondering if this is happening in other sections, and is it actually helpful in streamlining the path to more college scholarships?
I have not heard of it happening in other sections. That doesn't mean it's not. It just means I don't know. I don't know if you've heard about Junior Grand Prix Tennis, which is a new organization that started up in Florida, totally separate from USTA, totally separate from the Universal Tennis Ratings. They have developed their own system of competitions, of rankings, of ratings. It's something brand new, pretty exciting, and it's sort of in line with what you guys are doing in Texas, in that they have these different levels of tournaments, and kids are ranked within their level. So you can be number one in the beginner level, you can be number one in the advanced level, you know, but you're still number one, and it's like winning the national championships in Division III versus winning it in Division I. A national championship's a national championship.
Yes, exactly.
You know, to be number one is to be number one. It's awesome. And so it'll be interesting to see they're really growing and expanding week by week. And that'll be an interesting system to watch as it kind of, you know, gets its feelers out into more areas of the country. But so far they're having great success with their events and filling up their draws, and you know, there's a lot of leeway for the tournament directors to get creative. And so it'll be fun to watch that. But, you know, from my experience here in the southern section, it's still all about ranking, you know. So There's one ranking, and you try to get yours as good as you can. So.
And let me ask you this. One of the biggest bothers for me as a community college coach was I'd encounter a lot of, and just hear me out in this, a lot of spoiled, rotten kids. And what I mean by this is we would go out and we would recruit and we would offer them full rides to the community college system, and they would turn them down just to go be regular students. In other words, they would turn down a full ride, a free education, just to go be a regular student at, say, like the University of Texas, or let's just put it in your neck of the woods, the University of Georgia. Do you hear a lot of stories like this happening where we take, say, some pretty good junior tennis players that just kind of give up and don't enter the college system?
Yes, I hear a lot of it. And I have to tell you, as a mom, it's really, really worrisome to me. And it's not so much that they're turning down the full ride and all of that. They're turning down tennis. They're done. They're burnt out. They want to go have a normal college experience. They're sick and tired of day in, day out having to breathe, eat, think, sleep, tennis. They want to go be normal kids. And I get that. I mean, our competitive system in this country leads to burnout. And it takes some really top-notch coaching, really top-notch parenting, really top-notch, I don't know the word for it, but, I mean, you have to not get sucked in to the points game. You have to maintain a distance in order to help the kids maintain their interest in the game and want to continue to pursue it at the college level. And I'm seeing it more and more. And even among, I mean, some of the kids, it's not even that it's burnout. It's that, you know, they want to play tennis in college, but they didn't spend their high school years point chasing and playing all the high-level tournaments. So they aren't getting noticed by the coaches at the top academic institutions that, from an academic standpoint, they belong at. And so they can't go there and play tennis, but they can go there and just be a student,
mm-hmm.
if that makes sense. So the kids are choosing the school as opposed to choosing the tennis.
Right. Go ahead, finish.
Well, I was just going to say, I mean, it's an interesting conundrum as a parent because, you know, on the one hand, college is supposed to be about the education. I mean, number one, right? I mean, that's mm-hmm. why you go to college is to learn and get a degree and prepare yourself for life in the adult world. But on the other hand, when a child has invested so much of their childhood and a family has invested so much of its time in the world of junior tennis, I mean, to me, as a mom, I don't know how I would handle it if my kid came home one day and said, you know what, I'm not going to play tennis in college, I'm done. And I would hope that I would take a breath and step back and say, you know what, this is the right decision for you. I hope that I have the skills to do that, but I can tell you deep in my gut it would hurt.
Yeah, no, I understand. It is a lifetime sport, and you know, you as you age, you get that. It's a lifetime fun time commitment. You know, it's not supposed to be like a business, and it shouldn't
right.
hurt. It shouldn't be bitter and all those things. I remember one of the great stories I heard from Coach Gould about John McEnroe after he did so well before his freshman year there at Stanford was he came back from Wimbledon and Coach Gould took him out walking around I think it was the courts of campus and told John to give him his rackets and John looked at him kind of funny and he said, you're going to just go be a regular student for a semester. I don't want to see you at the courts practicing. I don't want to see you playing. I just want you to go be a student. And he didn't understand that. But it's along the lines of something that you're saying here is that, you know, you need a little bit of time to be a student, you know, with and just to be there without the pressures of some of these other things, you know. And somewhere in this is a transition period. And I think that's what Gould recognized, you know, is that mm-hmm. if you go too hard, too fast, then you're going to rebel. And it may be against your parents. It may be against the school. So we had to take a step back here and let there be a little bit of a release. And if we didn't do it the right way, then it could have been an explosion the wrong way. Does that make sense to you, Lisa?
Sure. I think we're...
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I think that was one of the smartest things he did for McEnroe. You know, he just gave him that release.
Well, and that's the sign of an excellent coach. You know, he saw the pressure that individual was under and gave him permission to take a break from it. And to me, you know, what sets apart a great coach from the rest of the pack is being able to read the individual and to be able to understand and advise that individual based on his or her where they are, you know, looking at where they've come from and where they are in the present and knowing how to advise them to move forward. And I think there are a lot of coaches, junior coaches, college coaches, coaches at all levels that aren't able to see that. They're not able to look at the individual. They look at, you know, you're a tennis player, period. Mm-hmm. And what Dick Gould is, you know, he was known for that, you know, being able to say, okay, you're John. You're one of my tennis players, but first you're John. And here's what John needs right now, and I'm going to help him get that.
Yeah, that's very well put. Let me ask you this, and we talk about international versus American here on the show quite a bit. I mean, in your experience, in your opinion here, is the American junior tennis player, are they in jeopardy of losing opportunities? And I'm talking about a lot of opportunities to international players just based on their attitude towards tennis?
That's what we keep hearing. You know, the American juniors are soft. They don't have the work ethic. Their parents are a pain in the neck and blah, 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 blah. And I don't buy it. I mean, there are certainly kids out there with bad attitudes, and there are parents out there that are a pain in the neck, and I'm probably one of them, much as I try not to be. But I think that's so much of a generalization that there's no way it can be 100% accurate. And my feeling is this. I want my kids to go to college because I want them to see a bigger world than the one they grew up in. And that bigger world includes kids from different countries. It includes kids from different economic statuses. It includes kids with disabilities. It includes kids with different personality traits, with different interests. All of that is what makes the college experience so rich and so valuable to me. And so I don't have a problem with there being international players on a college team. Where I guess take issue is the teams that are filled or are majority non-American. And I don't think that's right. I mean, and that's just my personal opinion. I think that the American kids in an American university, and especially state-funded universities, there should be a certain number of spots reserved for the American kids. And I've asked David Benjamin about it. I've asked the NCAA. I've asked USTA. And, you know, why is the conference that limits the number of international players to two? Is that the junior college system?
Yeah, that's the NJCAA. Exactly.
NJCAA. Okay, so why can't everybody, why can't every conference have a limitation like that? And the answer I got from David Benjamin was that the conferences want to win, and so they're going to recruit whoever they need in order to position them best to win. And if they are limited, and if they then stop winning, then they, the bigger schools can afford to file the lawsuits. That was his answer to me. And that's not an issue with the community colleges. They don't have the money to hire the lawyers to file the lawsuits. So I'm not sure that's accurate. I don't know. I mean, it may be. It may be accurate. It seemed... it left a bad taste in my mouth.
I would agree with your bad taste.
Yeah, well, I know. I mean, I know you and I are on the same page with this. I will say that I hope my son ends up on a team somewhere where there are kids from other countries. And, you know, for those who follow Parenting Aces, you know, they know that my son spent a month in Spain training, and he was with kids from a bunch of different countries while he was there, and it's probably the best educational experience he'll ever have, ever, because he was there as a 17-year-old on his own without his mom and dad there to hold his hand, without coaches who cared about him. I mean, the coaches were there to work. They weren't there to make sure my kid had his every need taken care of. And it was a phenomenal experience for him. And so I hope he has a repeat of that in college. That said, I hope that there's a spot on a team available to him as an American.
Yeah.
So, okay, I mean, there are college coaches out there that are committed to fielding an American team as much as possible. You know, there are coaches out there that are committed to that.
And they're being successful. That's what I love about our sport.
Yes.
You know, the commitment to development of players is still working.
Yes.
You know, and that's the striver mentality that is driving the American dream, that is driving the American college tennis team. You can't put a used car salesman at the top of an American university and expect it to work. It doesn't, and it's very evident. So I've got two more things I need to address with you, and then I'm going to let you go. First is, as you've been going through this on your blog and as a part of this network, what have you and your family learned about the American college system that you believe is informative for other juniors?
It's all about relationships, just like everything in life. I don't care how good you are, how high your ranking is, how much money you spend traveling to this and that event. If you don't form relationships, you are really putting yourself behind the eight ball.
Very, very good advice. Now, second thing I got to know here is, if I've got college coaches, and I know I do, if I've got people that are in the college tennis world that need some influence, which I know I do, that listen to this program, as a junior mother that drives that junior tennis world out there, what do they need to understand about these junior kids coming up and what's coming that they would like the college tennis world to know about them?
I think, one, that rankings don't tell the whole story, rankings and ratings, because I know tennisrecruiting.net, you know, those ratings are highly valued by a lot of the coaches. But those ratings and the USTA rankings do not tell the whole story. And I would urge the coaches to try to dig a little deeper. I know they're swamped and busy and they've got lots of emails coming in and phone calls coming in. But if there's a player who is really showing interest in your program, try to dig beneath the numbers and see what else you can learn about that that player, because there are stories there that really may make the difference for your team. And there are kids out there that have earned the chance to be part of a college program whose ranking or rating may not reflect that. But these are kids that have put the work in consistently over the past 10 years, who are good people. They're not just good tennis players. They're good people, and who are going to make a positive impact on your team.
Well, very well put, Ms. Stone. And and I want to thank you for coming on today, and I always offer my guests a chance to put in that plug for what they've got going on. So you want to do that right quick?
Sure. I mean, I'm hoping your listeners will check out parentingaces.com. We've tried to compile a lot of information for parents of junior tennis players from beginners all the way through the process, and I've got information on there on competing, on health and fitness and nutrition, on college recruiting, on the rules of tennis, and so I invite everybody to take a peek at parentingaces.com and also check out my radio show, the Parenting Aces Show, that airs on Mondays at noon Eastern, and all of the podcasts are archived online under the radio show tab on parentingaces.com. So you can follow us on Facebook and Twitter. It's at Parenting Aces, on Instagram as well. And share information, please. The more informed we parents are, the better the tennis world is going to be, I promise you. Informed parents drive the process. And the coaches don't have the time to keep up with all the information. The parents do not only have the time, but they also have the inclination because it's in the interest of their child. So the more information we can share out there, I think the better off we're all going to be.
I agree, Lisa. Now, before you go, I have a little bit of a surprise for you. The nearest I can figure in mathematical calculations I've been able to do, when you do your show next Monday, that's going to be the 1,000th hour of broadcasting that we put out on the UR Tennis Network, okay? So you can announce that on your show. Yes, you're going to be the one that gets to do that. And then following that, we're going to renew ourselves for the fourth year after that, starting next week. So that's all going to you get to start that off next week, okay? So 1,000th hour is yours. And then the fourth year, I think Chuck gets to start that off after that, okay? So congratulations to you, and enjoy that. And I'm so excited that you came on today. It's been wonderful to spend this hour with you. You know, as hosts, we don't get to, you know, we don't really get to talk a lot. You know what I mean?
Right.
I mean, we listen a lot, but we don't get to talk a lot. And I know that I listened to your interview with David, and I know you wanted to speak a lot, and I wanted you to get a chance to be able to express what you had on your mind, so I appreciate that today.
Well, thank you. Thanks for giving me the opportunity to do that, and thanks for giving me the opportunity to have a show on the network. It's been an incredible learning experience, so I'm loving it.
Yeah, you do a great job, and I look forward to talking to you again off air sometime.
Great. Thanks, Jason.
Yeah, have a great day. Bye-bye.
Thanks.
There you have it, ladies and gentlemen, Ms. Lisa Stone. And listen, you've got to check out that Parenting Aces site. That lady, she attracts more and more people every day. I think she's close to 10,000 people checking her out. And then her show is just an absolute joy every week. She attracts some high-name guests and high-profile guests in the tennis world. So please check her out. It's Monday, 11 o'clock Central Standard Time, and she puts on a good show, and that'll be the 1,000th hour that we've done in the tennis world. So please get out there and listen to her, and just so thankful that you tuned in today, either for the podcast or the live broadcast. So get out there and hit some tennis balls today. We got a lovely day here in Texas. Thanks for listening in, and have a great week. Bye-bye.